Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name is Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in B2B marketing. It's run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for B2B marketers. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Andrew Last, Managing Director at Harvard, about influencer marketing. Plus, Jennifer Howe talks about product and marketing integration. From Six, we have Nikki Lloyd sharing a key lesson that she's taken on her marketing journey. And sales and marketing at Synode, Johan Heiger, celebrates some great business marketing. In times of risk adversity, influencer marketing can play a greater role than ever. I'm joined to talk about it by Andrew Last, the Managing Director at Harvard. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. So before we dive into influencer marketing, tell us a bit about Harvard.
Okay, well, I'll keep this short and sweet because people want to hear about influencers and not about Harvard. But we're a PR and marketing agency. And we help tech brands make their move. So what we mean by that is we work with technology companies of all sizes, you know, blue chips to challenger brands, and we help them build awareness, move into new markets, and you know, also drive demand. And our services kind of cover everything from brand development and creative stuff through to PR and social content, always on type stuff. And I suppose part of that is that we also run integrated advocacy programs for clients. And that's where influencers come in, and it's somewhere it bridges between the PR and the marketing side.
Okay, so let's dive into influencer marketing then, as you propose. So before we kind of go detailed, we probably should start with definitions. What on earth is influencer marketing, Andrew?
Very good question, Dave. What is influencer marketing? I'll start with a bit of a technical definition. So you know, if you're to Google this, it'll say something like it's using social media marketing and using endorsements and product placement from influencers. But if we take a kind of step back from that, I think if you think about the consumer world of influencers, it's huge business. You know, you've got celebrities all the way down to micro influencers, bunch of people out there on TikTok and Instagram, you know, dancing, doing workouts, playing computer games and being watched for some reason. And really that's all about expanding your reach as a brand and using these influencers. If we bring it back to the business world, really my definition of that would be it's using brand advocates. They often be thought leaders, and it's all about increasing your reach, driving your credibility. And I suppose the most important thing is helping your audiences get closer to your brand and build an affinity with it.
Okay, so I kind of prefaced your coming in by talking about the role of influencer marketing having grown in recessionary times. Is that true?
Well, recessionary times, that's a big statement. It's a true one, but yeah, it's a tough one to discuss. Has it grown? Well, I mean, we are, as an agency, we're seeing an increase in doing more influencer work, and there are more requests coming from brands and some of our customer base. So yes, I think it's relatively in its infancy in B2B compared to consumer, but yes, it does look like it's on the rise. But I wouldn't say it's just down to the economic situation. I don't think it's just a matter of finances. I think it was on the rise anyway, you know, prior to 2020. And the reason for this is it's because It's about trust. And I think historically, if you think about the last 5 years or so, brands have been using their social channels as a way to build affinity with their audiences, trying to get the kind of more human side across of a B2B brand. But I think we should be honest to say that even before COVID, that people started to fall out of love, say, with branded social channels, and really we're kind of migrating over to individuals over brands. And I think that absolutely, if we've seen anything, I mean, this is number 92, I think, if you've been seeing anything over the last, 6-9 months, it's been that, of course, digital has grown massively, and traditional channels have shrunk. And so to me, it's just a part of that. It's accelerated it, but it was on that road anyway.
And you talk a lot about trust there. So maybe we should unpack that and talk about what the benefits of influencer marketing are.
The first one, I suppose, actually, if we take a step back, I mean, I did a little bit of research for the call. Just a little bit, as I'll probably be found out quite quickly, was they say that, and this is general influencers, for every dollar you spend, you get $6.50 back for influencer marketing. That's not specifically for B2B, but of course, if you're just thinking commercially, there's probably a commercial reason for it. But I mean, that should not be the reason that you get into B2B influencer marketing. It's as you mentioned previously, if you know, think about your audience, these are B2B decision makers and leaders. What they're looking for is trusted sources, and they want reliable advice and insight. So I'd say the first thing that you get from influencer marketing is this kind of extra layer of credibility. Often the people you could be partnering with are experts and thought leaders. What that brings as well is access to new networks. That's driving your reach as well. And a final benefit, but a really important one, would be that you should get into this because these are going to be long-term advocates for your brand. I mean, influencers almost, to some extent, feels like a bit of a dirty word. The descriptions I had of, the consumer world. No, these aren't just people you're paying to expand your brand. These are people who are going to believe in it and be your best brand advocates.
And I guess then if there's a kind of 6.5 times benefit in sort of payback that you're talking about there, I should therefore jump straight into asking how businesses should go about influencer marketing to get that return.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I suppose to take a step back just a bit on metrics. I know your audience will love metrics and measurement. I'll do this very quickly, but the things to look at, of course, revenue is important, but if you think about what you'd want to quantify for influencers, you'd start with visibility and awareness. Are these helping increase awareness of you? Are you getting more impressions, views, etc.? Then go down to engagement and then actual kind of how much content's being created. Revenue would be the final one. So I think that's really important that when any business is taking on an influencer program, I think you should think brand first and revenue last. And I know that's very easy for us marketeers to say, and the business may not agree. Of course, that's a good place to start. And if you then, once you've got to set your metrics, I would say that don't dive straight into influencers. Take a real step back and think about advocacy in general. So we would typically split this out into 5 audiences. There's media, the likes of journalists, etc. Your employees, they're influencers, they're ambassadors as well. Customers, partners, and then the final one is as thought leaders, and that is where your kind of traditional influencers are, and that's the way you should think first, because if you can bring this into a single program where you're bringing as I said, customers together with third parties, together with employees, then that's suddenly a really, really powerful channel. Otherwise, if you just think of thought leaders, it could be quite tactical.
Okay, so which organizations do this sort of thing well now?
Okay, who does it well? Yeah, I mean, I to be honest, the best, the people who do influencers and advocacy the best do tend to be a little bit under the radar because they're not overtly using this channel. If I was to look in the B2C space, someone who's absolutely built their brand off the back of this is, Beats by Dre. Now, they almost didn't market to start with. They just went with everyone from some big brand ambassadors, celebrities, down to micro influencers, and that's how they built a whole company. There's lots written on that. In the B2B space, the one that I just think does a phenomenal job, and they're not a client of ours, is Xero. And they just, they have an ultimately they're an SM, they're focusing on SMEs, and they just do a brilliant job of having their customers fly the flag for them. Partners do the same. They then bring in third-party influencers and thought leaders. I saw the other, I think it was last week, they did this brilliant event for their customers where they got psychotherapists talking about helping small businesses get through difficult times. And they seem to bring it together very subtly, but very powerfully, and bring those different audiences I was talking about.
Cool. So let's end then with your three top tips for influencer marketing to get things moving.
Three top tips. Okay, I wasn't warned about this one, so bear with me. I would say, first things first, treat influencer marketing as you would any other channel. Think about it strategically, set the right metrics, and go about this properly. And the third one is bring the business on board. Don't just dip your toe in the water. Go about this properly as you would with taking on any other marketing channel.
Great advice and spontaneous top tips there from Andrew Marshall, Managing Director at Harvard. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure.
Coaching is a long-established means of helping businesses achieve their objectives. So how can coaching help marketing? I'm speaking with B2B marketing professional and executive coach, Jennifer Howe. Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. So first of all, tell us a little bit about what you're up to right now.
So right now, I am coaching five or six clients on a one-to-one basis. I am also looking at setting up a 6-week coaching program, hopefully launching early next year.
Okay, so in that case, I can ask you the question that's on everyone's lips with no fear that you won't be able to answer. What is coaching, Jennifer?
So, lots of definitions just by Googling, but I am a member of the International Coaching Federation. So, I can give you their official definition, which is coaching is a partnership with clients in a thought-provoking, creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. So, from my own perspective, what I would also add onto that is that coaching is goals-orientated. It is results driven. It really focuses on overcoming barriers. It focuses on improving performance and also really gives clients thinking space, which we don't really get lots of.
Okay, so some people would say that sounds, Jennifer, a lot like mentoring. So put us straight, what's the difference between coaching and mentoring?
Yes, there is a great difference. So, in mentoring, we assume that the mentor has the valuable expertise and experience to share. So, for example, as a mentor, I would meet with a mentee once a month over coffee to discuss whatever they wanted to talk about. Coaching is very different. So, as a coach, we believe the client knows what's best for them. And as a coach, we add the value by asking the meaningful questions. The value is in the listening that we do. There is a goal for each session. So, a coaching session will start with the goal for the session, which is set by the client. It's worked through within the session. And then at the end of the session, the result will be that the goal for that session has been achieved. And also, in coaching, the process is very much owned by the client. So, in mentoring, we would probably have conversations that would go from, say, month to month to month. But in a coaching session, we could probably never speak about that subject again. It all depends on what the client wants.
So what's intriguing to me about your profile a little bit is you're a coach, but you're also a business marketing professional. So I'm interested in how the one can help the other. How can coaching help business marketers?
So, well, as it says on the BMC homepage on your website, it's business marketing is the toughest job in the business.
Ah, yes.
So all the support that we can get that is available to us is exactly, you know, what we're after. So we look at complex campaigns, we work in different markets, we work with challenging stakeholders. There's pressure for us to be creative. There's pressure for us to react to market changes quickly and to stand out from competitors. So where coaching comes in is it really can give us our own space to work through all of that, looking at our performance. How do we deal with those challenging relationships? How do we make sure that we're managing our time properly? How do we make sure that we're really giving that excellence when it comes to a marketing team? And also coaching really from a personal development perspective and a well-being perspective gives us the time to focus on how we move forward. So we have great managers, we have great support, but a coach can be that confidential conversation that's just away from the people we work with day to day. And also it's great to identify the obstacles that we face on a daily basis and how to overcome them, because there are many at times.
Okay. So from a business marketing perspective then, let's say I want to get myself a coach. How do I get started?
So the first thing I would say is research. Look at, again, make sure you're clear on what coaching is and how it can benefit you and at what stages of your career. Also, I think it's definitely good to be clear on if you have the headspace for coaching. It is challenging and you will have work to do because it's action orientated to move forward. You also need to make sure that you have the investment money-wise and time-wise to put towards it. Coaching is often maybe six sessions, so it's not a large amount of money, but it does, you know, coaches do charge, obviously. And I think just talk to anyone in your network, anyone that you've worked with. Has anyone had coaching? How has it helped them? What's their view of it? So, yeah.
What sort of headspace do I need to clear to allow myself time for coaching?
So because coaching, it will feel quite different to anything if you haven't done it before. And because the coach is really there to add value in terms of asking the questions, there might be questions that you had never been asked before and had never thought of anyone asking you. So it's really... just, it definitely does need attention to really get the most out of it. And there are some times where, you know, you just don't feel in the right headspace to talk about yourself or to sort of really go deep into obstacles and challenges that you're facing.
Okay. So how should I find a coach?
So there are lots of us. So finding a coach is not the problem. It's finding the right coach for you. So going back to the International Coaching Federation, they have a page that's entitled Find a Coach. There's a great video on there that you can start with. I would also say go back to research. Have conversations with different coaches. Ask them questions. And look into their background and experience. Although that doesn't make or break a good coach, it could be something of interest to you. Also, looking at the qualifications they have, I have read a lot of content around that recently, but because coaching isn't regulated as a profession, going through a qualification means that a coach is following a code of ethics. They need to be clear around the ethics and explain to you what the difference is between coaching and counselling and really sort of working towards the standards of coaching. I'd also say both parties need to be comfortable. So if you have a chat with a coach, you both feel comfortable, there's a rapport there, and you really feel like you can build up trust with this person, I think that's a good place to start.
Great. So once you've got started, what does good coaching look like?
So good coaching looks like you are taking actions as a result of the coaching. You should come out of coaching session with actions. You should also feel a positive change. So when I'm coaching my clients, I ask them how they're feeling at the start of the session. I ask them midway, sort of, we're encouraged to check in. And then at the end, what's changed in the session that we've just had? So you should be able to say, I feel more confident that I can go and approach this person. I feel more confident that I can set out a plan for myself. I think the other thing is you need to feel comfortable, safe and respected. I think one of the values of coaching is that it's a safe space, that you can just get anything off of your chest. I think feeling like you've been challenged to think differently, you know, it's not just another conversation you've had. And also you should feel like you've got a clear path forward, again, mentioning the actions, timelines, be clear on the support you need and the barriers that might get in your way.
Jennifer Howe, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, Nicola Lloyd shares a key lesson that she's taken on her career journey to being senior strategist at Six. Nicola, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dave. Really appreciate it.
Good to have you here. So before we dive into your lesson, maybe you could tell us a bit about Six.
Well, we're a creative experience agency. We kind of really advance brands by using strategy, design and technology to help our clients transform their propositions. For us, it's all about delivering happy employees and loyal customers and helping businesses to thrive through change. We tend to work at pace with flexibility in real true partnership with our clients, going beyond the traditional agency model, because the challenges that we face and solve go beyond the remit of a traditional agency, I would say. Okay. We help businesses sort of unearth their compelling vision of the future and build digital platforms that transform behavior and culture into brand and social impact. So hopefully our clients can go home at the end of the day proud to talk about the work that we've done together.
Well, that's a good ambition to have. So I've got to ask, what skills and experiences got you there?
Well, from my point of view, I've always really been passionate about understanding consumer behaviour and how we can develop products and services that really make people's lives easier. It was initially fostered in my undergraduate degree in sociology and master's in marketing. So I started work as a marketing research officer at Bristol University, working with the Department for Education and Skills and Development on kind of nationwide research project, looking into CPD practice among UK professional associations, which involved a lot of research and actually peer review articles being published and a book being created. And I really kind of enjoyed that, but I wanted to get out into what I would call real world. So I moved on from that into my first job in the agency side with a specialist technology agency. We worked with clients like Oracle and Avaya, Motorola and Cisco. And it was really fascinating to be involved way back in 1999 on the first joint venture between Motorola and Cisco that was really about driving the development of wireless internet. Right. And building the future of mobile communications. So that's kind of where my experience started off. Since then, I've been in the industry for 23 years. A lot has changed over that time, but it what hasn't, I would say, is my passion for effectiveness and that thirst for learning that I've always had. I've worked both kind of agency and client side through the line with public and private sector bodies. And that kind of gives me a really good broad skill set and a balanced approach to the work that I do, I think.
Well, I guess I'd love to pick up just a little bit on your kind of starting point there, because you kind of started with, a passion around consumer behaviour and understanding that consumer behaviour. And I'm wondering if kind of people listening who, you know, might be intrigued by that as well, would find it valuable to understand kind of the how you went about, you know, you have that passion, but how do you go about actually really exploring that in a career?
Yeah, I mean, I think it started off really when I was doing my undergraduate degree and working in retail at the same time. I wasn't one of those fortunate students whose parents basically paid them to kind of enjoy the luxury of a student livelihood. So I would pop to my sociology lessons at Bristol University and then nip down the road to the Triangle and work in Next for a couple of hours every day. and I suppose that interaction with the with consumers, with customers, was kind of something that kind of grounded that interest, that kind of passion for people, and a kind of curiosity about kind of individuals and why they do certain things and why they buy certain things. And then through that, it was then the idea that came across to me about pursuing that further and going into a role within marketing, which I kind of experienced an element of from that role working eventually as a deputy store manager on a part-time basis. So, yeah.
And then another theme that you talked about in that was effectiveness. I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about what you mean by that and how people can go about learning to be effective.
I think for me, from my point of view, effectiveness is really important in terms of any of the communications, any of the interactions that we have. From an agency point of view and from a client side point of view, it's ensuring that whatever we are looking to achieve, that we can actually verify the results of that work and that whatever we do is actually going to deliver against some KPIs and outcomes properly. I suppose effectiveness in your own life is more around being a good listener, you know, being able to think in a growth mindset, being open to new challenges, being, you know, a good leader if you're working in a leadership kind of capacity, thinking about the right skills that you have and what you can bring to a team. So I suppose there are different sides to effectiveness. One is a kind of ROI driven, kind of results driven, and the other one is more about that kind of empathy and having an effective leadership style and character.
And I just want to push you a little bit about that point. So in terms of going about learning to do that, are there any tips that you can give our listeners for both sides of the coin, both the kind of results driven side and the empathy side?
I think it's from a results driven side, it's obviously important to have the right data, the right tracking in place to be able to actually benchmark against what you're trying to achieve. I found that a lot of clients still struggle to actually extract the data from within organizations to enable them to actually deliver something that can be determined as effective. From a personal point of view, I think some of the leadership skills and kind of workshops and really looking at yourself as and your own purpose as an individual can actually help you shape the way that you communicate and engage with your teams and cohorts within business as well. So we've kind of worked on some leadership skill toolkits ourselves as a team with another business to help leaders to just reflect on the way that they work.
Okay. And Nicola Lloyd, Senior Strategist of Six, thank you very much.
Thanks.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Johan Heiger, the Sales and Marketing Man at Cynode, to celebrate it. Johan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Dave.
So first of all, tell us a bit about what Cynode does.
Cynode demystifies skills. And what we mean by that is that we are a software as a service platform that not only identifies, visualizes skill, but ties this to personal ambitions and individual development goals. And the next step of this is, of course, to use this in staffing of projects, whether they're internal or external. And we've had great success providing this to consulting firms. And now we're looking at taking on the next step in our scale up work to bring it into other tech companies as well.
Cool. So world domination is on the horizon. But maybe before you get there, tell us a bit about the great business marketing that you've seen that has caught your eye.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things, and at the same time, I think it's spread out. It's hard to find one extremely good example. I guess it depends a bit on what are you looking for, right, and what are you in the need of at the moment. I think that great business marketing is first of all, it's about providing knowledge and value to your target audience, right, to get that interest. But it's also, of course, it has to lead to conversion. It has to lead to sales. So today, we're in a world where marketeers need to work very closely with sales. And unfortunately, it's not done in every company. I think some of the very large ones are struggling a little bit still, but it's happening. And at the moment, I'm looking at, together with our team, you know, a complete redesign of the of our website, which is, of course, part of a much, much bigger project with, you know, our story, our branding, our way of selling. And that's what I did look at somebody I thought was doing really well at this is a company called Segment. And Segment was founded about 10 years ago. They're already at over 500 employees and 20,000 customers. And basically, it's a customer data platform. And if you take one concrete example, I mean, they've got a website, which I think is really good because, you know, it's all about navigation, right? And I think they've been able to do this really, really well. It's a simple site, yet filled with heaps of information, and it's got some good points to how to convert the visitor as well. And I think that's a real challenge for many, many B2B companies today to be able to create that.
And tell me a bit more about that. What is it that you've been able to take from what Segment have done and make part of your web rebuild?
I think it's the main ideas around the navigation, and I'm not saying we're going to, you know, take a copy of that and do exactly it, because we're in the middle of the project and the analysis right now. But it's going from let's say yesterday's design or an old design to really thinking about how do you structure this. So it's, I mean, as a marketer, you tend to want to put a lot of things in there, right? You're proud of your product, your knowledge, and all of this and that. But you need to kind of limit that, and most of all, you need to make it is a smart structure that will also convert. And you have to have some clear call to actions. And when you have a call to action, that needs to also be followed up with like good landing pages. But most of all, it needs to fit with what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So it's actually pretty complex. But I think we're finding our way through this. And it's on the highest level, it's about, let's say, the design. And then it's going to be more about the whole, I think, the major challenge is perhaps saying very, very little, but telling a big and enticing story.
And indeed, and that's not just a digital problem, is it? That's kind of the challenge that we as marketers face all of the time.
Yeah, it is because you know, most of the time we like to talk and we like to talk about our products. We're proud of that and our experience. And it's really about, I mean, there's so much noise today. There's so much competition, not only in our own vertical and segment, but I guess, you know, people, our audience, our target, they're already tired. They're overwhelmed. So how are we going to cut through, right? Mm-hmm. So that's just one example. I think other things related to, you know, great business marketing is I'd like to see it as a way of linking it to growth hacking. So a little bit, there's been many people talking about it, but Sean Ellis was one person that coined it back in the days, and that marketing has a really important role, not only to make the brand visible and to create a strong brand, but also to, I mean, really drive really drive growth for the company. I mean, it's a huge part. And depending on how big you make the scope, that could involve driving the product development, but certainly tied to sales. And in some companies, a very strong link to customer success activities as well, to treat and train and make sure the customer gets the full value of your offer.
And would you say those things are more important now after, you know, we've all gone through a year of COVID-19?
I think they are, because in my view, it ties very closely to, let's say, customer care and making sure our existing customers are very, very satisfied and get the full value. So treating them even better than before, understanding, catering for their needs and helping them is important. But it is also, I think we've come to a point where everyone in the industry, wherever you are, is, I think we're all a bit more humble now, right? Compared to 12 months ago. And that's probably been good for many companies and cultures and individuals. And I think, you know, it's just about, it's become more of helping, I think. Helping is caring, and helping is not as aggressive as selling and reaching sales goals. So I think we have an important role to play there.
Johan Heiger, Sales and Marketing at Cynode. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Dave. Good to be on the show.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Andrew Lloyd, Jennifer Howe, Nikki Lloyd, and Johan Heiger. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.